Dan Shulman is not among those, I don't believe, who would question the athleticism of baseball players. Our fantastic play-by-play voice at Sportsnet, ESPN as well, he joins us now. Dan, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm good. Nor am I a strong man in any sense of the in any definition of the word. That's for sure.
Boy, we've been talking a lot of strong man this week after we found out the origins of Spider Tack, which I want to get to in just one second. Tyler O'Neill, we were just talking about him coming in. Great to see him living up to the promise that he's shown for so long on his way up to the St. Louis Cardinals.
It really is, you know, and he's been an interesting guy because he strikes out a ton, and he never walks, and you wonder if those guys can have sustained success, and he's finding it this year. You know, he's hitting for a good average. He's got 15 home runs. He's hot right now, got an OPS way over 900, and I'm happy for him. I thought he was kind of on that cusp. Could he be a regular? Is he destined to be a backup? And he's taking it to another level this year.
Yeah, he is. It's great to see. And he's not worried about Spider Tack right now, though maybe some people have cooled their use of Spider Tack. This wasn't something that was in a lot of people's lingo a week ago. It suddenly is. Where are you on this after Josh Donaldson calls out some big pitchers? Garrett Cole can't answer the question. We're talking about substance use on baseballs in the major leagues.
Well, I don't think Donaldson should have called out Garrett Cole because chances are excellent that some of the pitchers on the Minnesota staff are using it too. And so I don't think it was right to go with one specific pitcher. There's been a culture of using this for years and years and years in baseball. I'm sure there are many substances, and I didn't know Spider Tack. I didn't know that name before last week. But whether it's, you know, rosin and sunscreen or something a little stickier like they're using, almost everybody's doing it. And we're going to see a lot of people whose spin rates go down and et cetera, et cetera. So I do think it's got to be dealt with if possible. I would hate to see the game slow down with umpires checking guys 8 or 10 times a night. But I think baseball and the players got to get at the table and say, okay, let's all get on the same page here and let's find the line. This is okay. This is not okay. Keep everything above board. The hard thing is when you go out to the mound, is an umpire, you know, able to tell, well, you know, this is okay and that's not, this is this substance and that's that substance. No pun intended. It's a bit of a sticky situation for them to deal with right now, but I do think it's got to be dealt with.
Yes, it does, and there needs to be a firm decision made. Okay, beyond this line, you do not cross. Pete Alonso took a bit of a different approach yesterday. The Mets star came out and said, yeah, put whatever you want on the baseball. I'm more concerned about the baseball itself. Major League Baseball has chosen to liven the ball up. It's chosen to deaden it. He believes that has to do with free agency, but whether you agree with his theory as to why or not, Dan, this is a thing, and this is where Major League Baseball is complicit in the way that it has tried to alter the game as well.
Yes, and again, I think the players should always be at the table, and that's not going to happen. The two sides don't like each other enough, and the owners want to have the game, and the commissioner and the owners want to, you know, be in charge of the game, and I don't think they involve the players enough. But boy, does it make you worried about the collective bargaining agreement this winter, doesn't it? When these two sides have to sit down and somehow try to find a way to avoid a strike or a lockout next year, because there is so much mistrust between the two sides, and there is rhetoric in public, so much negotiating through the media, like it's a recipe for disaster. And if you'd given me 1,000 ideas, I never would have come up with the theory that Pete Alonso had. I never would have considered that. I don't know if it's true or not, but now it's out there, and now it's a thing that's going to have to be dealt with, and there are probably others. And I just hope there are enough sensible people on both sides that whenever they do sit down, they're able to iron through these things and make sure there's baseball in 2022.
And Dan, it seems like there's a lack of trust. You know, you mentioned between the owners and the players, but I also get the sense there's a lack of trust from the fans towards the whole situation. And I think part of that can be traced to the commissioner's office. You know, obviously people had complaints about how Rob Manfred handled the Astros scandal, how he's handled some of the issues with a juiced ball or a not juiced ball. I mean, do you have confidence in Rob Manfred being able to find a good, equitable solution to the doctored balls issue that everyone is talking about right now?
does that size say enough? I don't know. You know, I love baseball as much as anybody. But the history of baseball is there will be issues. There will be cheating. There will be labor issues between the two sides. And things will drag on in a louder, longer way than they need to. So I'm not sure. I mean, I hope they do it. And I think clearly this has scared some pitchers, and I think some guys who were using it last week are probably not using it this week, but maybe they start up in a month or two again if they think they can get away with it. People are going to try to get away with stuff if there are no rules and no consequences, and that's why it's got to be explicitly and publicly stated what's allowed and what's not. And again, I think players need to be at the table, both pitchers and hitters. It's time, it's long past time for the two sides to try to be allies and build the game rather than, you know, hate each other more than they love the sport, because it can tear the sport down. So, I think it's a very important time for the sport, and the doctored baseballs are just one of many issues that are going to have to be worked out in the next few months.
And there's a lot of parallels, I think, to be drawn between what we're seeing right now and the steroid era in the 90s and the early 2000s, right, where, you know, there was sort of an open secret that a lot of people knew about but no one talked about, and then it kind of exploded into the public consciousness. And I look back on that era, and there was so much focus on finding the individuals that were cheating or the individuals that were using certain substances rather than dealing with it from a systemic league-wide point of view, right? And I think that has to be the approach here. It's not so much, okay, can we figure out if Gerrit Cole is using or Jacob deGrom is using? It's figuring out a way for everyone to be put on a level playing field, right?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, it's got to start on the macro level, which is these are the rules. Everybody's agreed to them. And for everybody's sake, it's in all of our best interest for everybody to abide by the rules. But then you still need to enforce it on the micro level, where, you know, whoever the pitcher is, whether it's random, you know, are they like they've been taking baseballs out of games and sending them back to major league offices all season long. I don't know what they found. They haven't announced really at all what they found. But I think you've got to deal with it on a league-wide level and on an individual level. And the one of the differences to me between this and the steroid era is in the steroid era, it was, and this is just a between the white lines thing, pitchers and hitters were both using steroids. This sticky tack or spider tack, whatever it's called, this clearly benefits pitchers. And a lot of things in the last few years, in my mind, have benefited pitchers. I think the increase in analytics has helped pitchers more. I think the shift has helped pitchers more. I think the deadening of the ball this year has helped pitchers more. A lot of things have helped pitchers more this year. And you know, there's not enough. I'm a big proponent of the ball's got to be in play more, and there's got to be more action within the game. Not necessarily length of game, although that's another story, but there's got to be more action within the game. And I think a lot of the analytical changes have led to the launch angle generation. Strikeouts are okay, more swing and miss. And I think pitchers have taken advantage in a lot of different ways in the last few years. So I think they're going to go after this because it's one way they think they can kind of restore the balance of the game to the way that it used to be, but it's easier said than done.
So our press conferences, apparently, I would advise Gerrit Cole to get some PR help. I would advise Rob Manfred to get some PR help if I were in either of their camps. Man, that's one of the most uncomfortable answers, non-answers I've ever seen, or at least that I've seen in recent years, Dan. Gerrit Cole sitting there and trying to say something but not wanting to say anything.
Yeah, and I honestly, so I don't know if he expected that question coming into that press conference. I don't know, you know, was that a standard day before my start Yankee Zoom, or was that a in response to Josh Donaldson Zoom? So I'm not sure about that. But, you know, he had three options. He could admit it, deny it, or do what he did. And as uncomfortable as it was to watch him do what he did, he wasn't going to admit it. And I don't think he wanted to deny it because he's probably doing it, right? You don't want to have proof or evidence or something come out later to say, how could you say that? So I think he kind of got backed into a corner, and I don't know what else he could have done, to be honest with you. And you know what, if you're a Mariners fan or a Blue Jays fan or whatever team you are, like, you know, throw stones at your own peril, right? Because tons of guys are doing it, and somebody smart with a lot of free time in a week or a month is going to say, here are the 15 pitchers whose spin rates have dropped the most in the last month. And there are going to be some pretty big-time popular names on that list. So I do think it's widespread, but I am glad they're looking at it. I just don't think it's going to be that easy to solve.
Dan Shulman joining us here this morning on Rinto and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. Someone who had a little more time had a pretty clever quip that I saw the other day on Twitter saying, well, I'll tell you who's not using Spider Tack. Blue Jays bullpen not using spider tack because that's not going very well right now. Much needed win for the Jays. Got some help from the White Sox last night with some poor defense. They're treading water still, but the leaks are starting to show. How soon do they need to go get help for that bullpen?
Well, they do need help. They've got three ways they can get it. The guys they have can pitch better, and Chatwood had a very good inning last night. That's encouraging. They got Mesa into the game, and he had a good inning. That's encouraging. They can get help from their system. Patrick Murphy's close, but he's not a savior. I think he's a guy who can help, and I think he's going to be with the club in the next few days. He can help, but, you know, Baruchy, who knows? Merriweather, who knows? So I do think they've got to go outside the organization to get somebody, unless they're going to say about Thomas Hatcher, Nate Pearson, you know what? We're going to make them into a reliever this year. That's where the need is, and we're going to flip one of these guys into the bullpen. That could help immeasurably. That could be a really big help. I don't know that they're going to do that, though. I don't think that they're going to do that. If it's me, I go out, and I think I investigate a deal. I know it's only June the 10th, and you're going to have to give up more on June the 10th than you are on July the 31st, but you're going to get seven more weeks out of the guy. And you know, you can only have so many of these late-inning meltdowns before it's just too emotionally debilitating for a team, and you fall out of the race. You know, they're in the toughest division in baseball. There are four really good teams. At least they've got to finish third, and maybe they've got to finish second to make the playoffs this year. And I think you can get a good reliever relatively cheaply. I don't think you're giving up Jordan Groshans or Austin Martin or Gabby Moreno or anything like that to get a good reliever. So I do think it's something that's got to be investigated. But I think they'll watch it over the next week or so, see how Castro and Chatwood and Mesa are pitching, see if Murphy comes up, and then reevaluate. But I do think a deal's got to be considered.
The offense seemingly is fine, and it should only get better when George Springer, knock on wood, eventually gets healthy and eventually is added to this lineup. What about the starting rotation? There's been some very good stories, not the least of which is Alek Manoah, though it's very young in his major league career. Does that need bolstering at all as they push toward the playoffs?
It could use bolstering, but I think the bullpen is the bigger issue. You know, and getting, acquiring a starting pitcher is a much more expensive proposition normally than acquiring a relief pitcher. So I think they're a bit more in a wait-and-see mode, Scotty, on the rotation. You know, can Stripling keep doing what he's doing? Let Manoah get a couple. Let's see how Manoah does against Boston next week. And the other thing, too, is the schedule is getting a lot easier soon. It's hard the next week. But then there's a lot of Baltimore and some Miami and Detroit and Seattle. They haven't played the Orioles yet. They haven't played one game against Baltimore. They got 19 coming. So I think they'll kind of keep an eye on the rotation. Robbie Ray's been great. Hyunjin Ryu, by and large, has been really good. Matt's hot and cold, but overall okay. You know, and again, if the new Stripling is the real Stripling, and if Manoah, who really fought and grinded through it last night, if he can hold his own, the rotation's actually in pretty good shape right now. Never hurts to get another guy, but I think they're content to watch it for the next few weeks.
You know, it's only three starts into his MLB career, but what have your early impressions of Alek Manoah been so far, Dan?
The confidence and that competitiveness that we'd all heard about, that bulldog mentality, all legit, 100% legit. You know, remember he walked the first batter he faced in his first start at Yankee Stadium on four pitches, and Sandlin did great. He had to fight last night. There was an error, which was kind of his fault, kind of not, but it was Guerrero's error, led to an unearned run in the first inning, and he didn't have his best stuff. He did not have a great changeup, in my opinion, last night, and he did not have a great slider. He kind of had to fight through a game against one of the best lineups in baseball, basically with his two fastballs, with his four-seamer and his two-seamer, and he did it. He never looks nervous. He never looks scared. How about when Tim Anderson, the White Sox, who was one of the great talkers in baseball, fourth or fifth inning, whenever it was, I think he got a little bit annoyed with Manoah staring at the plate. So he started yapping at Manoah, and Manoah started yapping back at him. Like, how about a guy in his third major league start on the road, yapping with a former all-star and batting champion, and you know, not backing down at all. And I don't think any of this is false bravado. I think he's tough as nails, and I think he's competitive as anything. His command is okay. His command's got to get better. His stuff is above average, but his command is just okay right now. If he can harness the command a little bit, I think he's got a chance to be a really, really good major league starting pitcher.
And speaking of players very early in their MLB career, Riley Adams has come up and started the last couple of games behind the plate. And, you know, not so much about what he's played well in those two games, but it is only two games. But given how Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire have performed for the Blue Jays, does Adams have a real opportunity to take the ball and run with it here?
I think he's got a real opportunity to play. Yeah. Now, whether that's 40% of the time, 50% of the time, I don't know. I believe he'll start tonight because there's a lefty on the mound for the White Sox, Dallas Keuchel, and Adams is a right-handed batter, so I think he will start. But, you know, McGuire's swinging the bat, okay. Jansen didn't hit at all, and I'm a big Danny Jansen fan. I really am, but he just hasn't hit. So, yeah, I think if Adams, even if he hits like 220 with power and he holds his own behind the plate, so far, so good, he's got a chance to play. And you know, it's funny, we've got five catchers that have, when they're healthy, are on the 40-man roster. The others are Alejandro Kirk, obviously, and Gabby Moreno, who's at AA. And a year from now, this may all be a moot point, because Moreno appears to have by far the highest ceiling of the group. And I think he's going to be the starting catcher for the Blue Jays by some point next season. I believe. But yes, in the short term, I think Adams, the more he hits and the better he catches, the more he plays, I think he's got a chance to stay even when Jansen gets healthy. And I don't know what that would mean for Jansen or McGuire. And then again, if all goes well, in 4 weeks, Alejandro Kirk could be coming back. And you know what happens. So they've got depth behind the plate, and they've needed it because of the injuries. But I'm curious and interested to see Riley Adams playing yet tonight. I thought he battled. He's got some swing and miss in there, but he battled. He fouled off some tough pitches from some good pitchers. Took a big walk last night late in the game. I think he's done really well.
He has, and if more Riley Adams means more Vancouver Canadiens jerseys in the crowd, you know I'm all for it. I am all for that. They're playing south of the border this year, but that's okay. Vancouver Canadiens got to have that pipeline working. I want to talk about out west, because you're making your way out here. Largely, we're talking baseball, but we know it's on the horizon. We've talked about it for 8 months, maybe a year on this station. The Olympic qualifier, it's going down in Vegas, calling some games for that.
I could not be more excited. Unfortunately, I won't be on site. There's no I wish I was coming. We will have a reporter there, but Javon Shepherd and I will be calling the games from a studio in Toronto. The rules are the rules. I would dearly, dearly love to be there, but I get it. And Canada basketball has always been like a, you know, like a side passion of mine. Never really had a chance to do a lot of it. I did do a FIBA Americas tournament for TSN some years ago, the one where they got beat by Venezuela out of the 2016 Olympics. Did a couple of the BioSteel games back in the day. But I'm thrilled. I could not be more excited to do the Victoria tournament. Obviously, if Canada wins, the men are on to the Olympics, and that would be tremendously exciting. And I'll be doing the Olympics as well for the men, whether or not our men qualify or not. I'm doing the men's tournament, and I'm doing the women's tournament. And, of course, our women are legitimate medal contenders. So I'm excited. Not 5 minutes before you called, I got an email with the roster for the women's national team for the tournament they're playing down in Puerto Rico, starting in a couple of days, and I'm starting to get my folders together, get my research going for international basketball. I'm really excited about it, and the men have a good chance. You know, if Giannis, obviously we'd love to see Jamal Murray, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and even Kevin Pangos. I was surprised Pangos wasn't on the list. But if Giannis isn't there, that helps. That's a bit of an equalizer, and it won't be easy. Greece is good. Turkey's good. The Czech Republic's good. China's good. There are a lot of good countries there. So, but, you know, we all know Canada's got the talent. And if the 21 guys who accepted an invitation to training camp are serious about playing, they got a chance to have a really good team.
I agree. I believe it's a team that's good enough to get to the Olympics. I think the loss of Jamal Murray is the separator between whether or not they can contend for a medal if and when they get there. That's just my personal opinion. But you also just inadvertently gave us an answer, because if that's the last tournament you called involving Canada, that means Andrew Wiggins probably said, I am not coming back to Team Canada until Dan Schulman is calling Canadian basketball again. You
that's
return
right.
for this tournament. He comes back for this tournament. We just unlocked it.
That's right. When he put out his post on Instagram and it was just him in the picture, I was like, Andrew, the picture was supposed to be both of us. What's going on here? But I'm very excited. And it's funny, maybe I shouldn't be this way, but, you know, being Canadian, you kind of see, oh, the Knicks lost. Okay, so RJ's okay. Oh, the Mavericks lost. Maybe Dwight Powell will play. Oh, the Celtics lost. Maybe Tristan Thompson will play. And that sort of thing. But, you know, getting Andrew Wiggins is big, and obviously it's taken years of smoothing over whatever friction existed for him to come back. But Wiggins, I mean, you just start with on, you know, so whether you want to call them big guards or wings, Wiggins, Dylan Brooks, RJ Barrett. That's a heck of a start. Canada's got a lot of bigs. I think they'll have enough bigs, and I think they'll have some experienced program guys, maybe a guy like Melvin Edgem. The one thing I have a little bit of concern about is the point guard situation. And Corey Joseph, obviously, they need Corey Joseph. He is unbelievably important. He's been, you know, one of the Captain Canada guys. He's played forever. But again, I thought Kevin Pangos would be there. I thought it would be Joseph and Pangos. Pangos, for people who don't know, is a great player playing in Europe, but he just signed a new deal, and I think he plays in Spain. And he suffered a serious injury a couple of years ago, and I guess he just wants to, you know, make sure that everything's okay, and that's his prerogative. But to me, behind Joseph, the next guy I see is Andrew Nembhard at the point, and I love Andrew Nembhard. He used to play at Florida, now plays at Gonzaga, and played for Canada in China at the World Cup last year. But he's young and relatively speaking, inexperienced. So they need Corey Joseph, and you know, they need a guy like R.J. Barrett to help with the ball handling, run some offense through him. It'll be a little bit unconventional at times, I think. But as long as they get Corey Joseph, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, I don't know if Nembhard's ready for his Jamal Murray Pan Am Games type moment yet. Yeah. I agree with you on that, but that's where he burst onto the scene. You know, the home province guy, Kelly Olynyk's going to be there. Always plays well in international basketball as well. We're pumped. I'm glad you're pumped as well. Dan, thank you very much for doing this, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Be well. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.